One morning on 7 o'clock rounds, she complained of insomnia and having sweats overnight. We checked the vital sheets. She still had no fever. Her blood pressure was normal. Her heart rate was running maybe slightly faster than before, but that was all. Keep a close eye on her, the senior resident told me. Of course, I said, though nothing we'd seen seemed remarkably different from previous mornings. I made a silent plan to see her at midday, around lunchtime. The senior resident, however, went back to check on her himself twice that morning. It is this little act that I have often thought about since. It was a small thing, a tiny act of conscientiousness. He had seen something about her that worried him. He had also taken the measure of me on morning rounds. And what he saw was a fourth-year student, with a residency spot already lined up in general surgery, on his last rotation of medical school. Did he trust me? No, he did not. So he checked on her himself. That was not a two-second matter, either. She was up on the 14th floor of the hospital. Our morning teaching conferences, the cafeteria, all the other places we had to be that day were on the bottom two floors. The elevators were notoriously slow. The senior resident was supposed to run one of those teaching conferences. He could have waited for a nurse to let him know if a problem arose, as most doctors would. He could have told a junior resident to see the patient, but he didn't. He made himself go up. The first time he did, he found she had a fever of 102 degrees and needed the oxygen flow through her nasal prongs increased. The second time, he found her blood pressure had dropped and the nurses had switched her oxygen to a face mask, and he transferred her to the intensive care unit. By the time I had a clue about what was going on, he already had her under treatment, with new antibiotics, intravenous fluids, medications to support her blood pressure, for what was developing into septic shock from a resistant, fulminant pneumonia. Because he checked on her, she survived. Indeed, because he did, her course was beautiful. She never needed to be put on a ventilator. The fever stopped in 24 hours. She got home in 3 days. What does it take to be good at something in which failure is so easy, so effortless? When I was a student and then a resident, my deepest concern was to become competent. But what that senior resident had displayed that day was more than competence. He grasped not just how a pneumonia generally evolves and is properly treated, but also the particulars of how to catch and fight one in that specific patient, in that specific moment, with the specific resources and people he had at hand. People often look to great athletes for lessons about performance. And for a surgeon like me, athletes do indeed have lessons to teach about the value of perseverance, of hard work and practice, of precision. But success in medicine has dimensions that cannot be found on a playing field. For one, lives are on the line. Our decisions and omissions are therefore moral in nature. We also face daunting expectations. In medicine, our task is to cope with illness and to enable every human being to lead a life as long and free of frailty as science will allow. The steps are often uncertain. The knowledge to be mastered is both vast and incomplete. Yet we are expected to act with swiftness and consistency, even when the task requires marshaling hundreds of people, from laboratory technicians to the nurses on each change of shift, to the engineers who keep the oxygen supply system working, for the care of a single person. We are also expected to do our work humanely, with gentleness and concern. It's not only the stakes, but also the complexity of performance in medicine that makes it so interesting and at the same time so unsettling. Recently, I took care of a patient with breast cancer. Virginia Magbu was 64 years old, an English teacher, and she'd noticed a pebble-like lump in her breast. A needle biopsy revealed the diagnosis. The cancer was small, 3/4 of an inch in diameter. She considered her options and decided on breast-conserving treatment. I'd do a wide excision of the lump as well as what's called a sentinel lymph node biopsy to make sure the cancer hadn't spread to the lymph nodes. Radiation would follow. The operation was not going to be difficult or especially hazardous, but the team had to be meticulous about every step. On the day of surgery, before bringing her to the operating room, the anesthesiologist double-checked that it was safe to proceed. She reviewed